All right, what's up, everyone? Welcome back to the Kill Shot DFS Army MMA Breakdown Podcast. We're taking a look at UFC Fight Night, France versus Albazi, coming up Saturday, June 2nd. An exciting card. I mean, you know, listen, the main event not being super great or anything, but what I like about this card is there are a lot of really close fights, a lot of decisions to be made, and we're going to be taking a look at this from a DraftKings perspective, from a betting perspective, and all of that. With me, as always, Big Marley, sleeves covered up this week. You scaring the ladies with the guns?
Yeah, I was told I had to put them away this week. They were just getting too big, you know.
All right, I love it. And Monk, freshly shaved, looking dapper, down in the south over there. I see you're enjoying southern living.
Yeah, definitely. The southern food's too good, man. I'm sweating more. But I'm eating more, so I can't drop any weight.
Meat sweats is what's happening. You're probably at the barbecue place every day. The meat sweats. I like it. And your boy is going to the DraftKings Fantasy Championships. That's right. Moving on to round three. You ready for this? 15 people flown live to Jacksonville. Jay Sizzles, as I like to call it. Right? 15 people, $650,000. In the prize pool. First place, $250,000.
Sick.
Last place, $10,000. It's like, fuck, I only won 10 grand.
Yeah, I mean, that would be rough, but $250,000, that's huge for MMA.
This is the closest I've gotten to $250,000 in a win, being 15 people away from it. Two people have two entries in there. The rest are all singles. So congrats to everybody who made it to the MMA championships. This for me, I've been in this round before. This is, I think, my third trip, although this is the first time. Mick Marley, we hung out, right? Were we together at the Buffalo Wild Wings?
Yeah, we were both in the finals. City
for the last time I was in this final?
Yeah, I was in it. You were in, I think we started out like during the prelims, we were number one and number two.
Dude, I almost won it. You remember what happened, right? I was winning it until Cormier got punched in the stomach by Stipe, and he went,
scored like 100
and I was like,
points.
Uh-oh, and that was round four, and I was like, wait a minute, Cormier is up three rounds. I was already counting the money. I was already counting my 100K. And then Cormier goes, ooh, and you saw him react to that. Anyway, we're going back. So that's happening June 24th. That is not this week. That's a few weeks out. I'm already studying that card. Don't get me wrong. Ilia Topuria versus Josh Emmett, that card. But we've got a beautiful card to break down this week. And again, I think it's really interesting because we do have a free square. We'll get to that. But let's start at the bottom of the card, work our way up to the main event. So we're going to start with the first fight of the night. And this one is Maxime Grishin taking on Luis Felipe Lins, with Grishin coming in as a slight minus 128 favorite. And Lins come back at plus 108, slight underdog. This one's interesting because these guys are, you know, light heavyweights, right? 205 pounders. Fight goes the distance, minus 120. So the odds makers are leaning. Fight goes the distance. And I'm not going to say that this is a striker versus grappler. That is not kind of how I see it. I don't know how you see it, Big Marley, but I just don't see it that way. Lins is a little more likely to go for a takedown, though, statistically. But I think this probably is more likely than not to play it on the feet. So how do you see this one going down, Big Marl?
Yeah, I agree. I think this is primarily a striking match. But if anyone is looking to takedowns, I think that's more likely going to be Lins. And I just have no idea how this fight's going to play out. I'm not sold on either guy. It's not going to be a high-paced striking match. Neither one of them are going to be chain wrestling for three rounds and putting up a big score. So I think we're just playing for a knockout here on both sides. Lins did score 92 points against Prochniak when he landed like four takedowns, I believe, in that fight in a decision. If he could do that here, 92 points, I'd be cool with that. But this is a tougher test. I don't see him scoring quite that much if he does win a decision. So I think a knockout's the only way either one of these guys is going to hit 100 points. I don't want a whole lot of exposure to it, to be honest with you. I'm hoping that it goes the distance. The winner scores 60, and I don't care who wins. I don't have a real lean in this one. I went with the guy who has a plus next to his name, so I took Felipe Lins. I think if he is looking for takedowns, maybe if he can land one in two separate rounds, maybe that's what it takes to get the judges to think he won the round. I think it'll be that close of a fight. But I'll be underweight on both sides. I'll try to fade it, to be honest with you, because I don't know how many lineups I'm going to create this week. But I'm just more interested in other fights throughout the slate, really. So I'll take Lins as my preferred play because he's cheaper and I'm picking him to win. But I'm picking him to win by a split decision. And if that's the case, he's not going to score well.
I'm going to show you a couple of little stats here to help with your decision making, right? Like, and Monk, you'll appreciate some of this. First of all, the numbers. Right, this is a pretty even fight, but DraftKings is pricing Maxim Grishin like he's a stud here at 8,800. I don't like that one bit right off the bat. I don't like the price. Number two, so Grishin in round one, Grishin in round two, which is effectively what you need for him to even have any hope of paying off. So it's plus 500, plus 900, plus 800 for round two. So these are really, really long odds possibilities. But Maxim needs to win in the first couple of rounds, or he doesn't do anything. There's nothing that that guy does that scores well. Knockdowns and a finish. That's it. It's got to happen in the first two rounds, or there's no chance he pays off 8,800. So my exposure to him will be limited to what these odds say it should be, which plus 500 is like, what, 15, 10%, some low number, and plus 800 is even worse. So this is a very, very low exposure situation.
He's 8,800 on DraftKings, and he's only like minus 125 on the betting line.
It's not a good scene. It's only an ownership play for the fast finish. Monk, I mean, you probably like the fact that he's weirdly priced because that'll lower the ownership, but it's a bad scene for me, both sides. But Lins is much more interesting on DraftKings for me.
I completely agree. I'll be on the Lins side 100%. I don't mean 100% roster, but comparatively. Grishin, you guys nailed it. Doesn't do anything from a DraftKings perspective. In his last, in his actually four fights in the UFC, 2.39 points. He's $400 over his average salary. He doesn't score well at all inside the distance. In fact, it's one of the lower inside the distance paces that we have on the entire card. And lastly for him, he allows well over 1.1 points per minute between takedowns and control time. So we have seen, you mentioned the Procneo fight. I believe Lins landed four takedowns in that fight. Hopefully we see something like that here at 7,400. He could really pay off that salary. He did score, 130 against OSP in a first minute win in his last fight. And like you said, Marley, 91 against Procneo. That could pay off the salary, but I would like to see a little bit more. He has the takedown upside. He has the ground upside. But I think you nailed it perfectly. We're looking for an early finish here, or else neither of these guys is likely going to pay it off. Lins has a much easier path at paying off his salary, so I will go with him. And in fact, he's 2-2 in the UFC, but since he moved to light heavyweight, guys, and that is that Procneo and OSP fight, he's 2-0 and scoring pretty well, 5 points a minute. So give me Lins. He has tremendous upside, especially when you compare him to Maxim Grishin. I mean, Maxim Grishin couldn't even do anything against William Knight, who was done after like 6 minutes. He landed like 69 strikes. He scored 65 points against a completely spent William Knight. If you remember, that was about as jacked as we've seen William Knight in quite a while. So he could barely move in there. So give me Felipe Lins for the upside at the cheap salary.
I feel like some of these guys, like Willie Knight, just likes looking at the mirror. I don't even think his jackness has anything to do with like him trying to be good at fighting or any of that. He just likes to look in the mirror. He's like,
yeah, he's just watched his last fight back. He doesn't care how many strikes he's throwing. He just wants to look at himself.
He's not looking at the hands.
No, he only cares about how he looks in the mirror. I will say, in terms of looks in the mirror, Felipe Lins is fucking ripped. Like, this dude looks good. He looks good at 205. Like,
he's looked a lot better.
Like an athlete, where he looked like a fat ass when he was fighting at heavy. Now he looks ripped. He looks good. But that being said, you're right. He doesn't score well. The other thing is, I don't need a 7,400 on this card. I've got a free square sub 7K that is locked in, and like, you could afford whatever you want to do. And there are so many close fights. So, you don't need either side of this. Salaries almost don't matter that much on this one. Oh, so man. You'll
salaries
see as we go through
matter
it.
At all.
Yeah. You'll see as we go through it. And especially with Lins, who's basically even odds for 7,400. Like, okay. And Maxim Grishin is not that great at stopping the takedown either. So there, Lins is the side for me. Grishin, his only hope is that fast finish. But let's not forget that Lins got knocked the fuck out by Tanner Boser. And that just doesn't happen. That should never happen to anybody.
And Tanner Boser wasn't even a real heavyweight.
Even like a regular person shouldn't get knocked out that quickly by Tanner Boser. Like if we put Big Marley in there against Tanner Boser, I say you last longer than Lynn's lasted.
No doubt.
Yeah, like, I don't say no doubt. Listen, let's not go crazy. But I'm saying, like, I'd give you a shot at lasting a little longer against Boser. Just, like, dancing around a little bit.
Yeah, I think we just needed Lynn's to burn through his $1 million, because how motivated is a fighter when they're a millionaire, you know?
Yeah.
Silk sheets and all that.
Yeah, not a lot of millionaires out there trying to get punched in the face, you know?
Then you quickly realize that after taxes and all that, and your family
really ain't that much these days.
Then it's like the money's gone. Like, you ain't rich, bro. You got to keep fighting. All right. Second fight of the night. Luan Lacerda taking on Damon?
I think.
No. Damon.
Apostrophe, brother.
Yeah. That's the hard A. Damon. Damon Blackshear, where it's a close fight that has flipped. Odds flip is always noteworthy, and it's continuing to go. So money is rolling in on Luan Lacerda here, above and over Damon Blackshear. I'm going to get a look at some of these props. So fight goes the distance, minus 155. Okay. All right. Three rounds of striking action, potentially. Let's take a look at what these guys have done traditionally in terms of their stats. And we can see here that Damon? I don't know. not landed a ton of strikes. 2.5 strikes per minute landed for him. Luan Lacerda, much, much greater volume, averaging 5.3 strikes per minute. Takedowns on average are about the same for both guys. Although, and again, there's not a big sample size, but, you know, my boy Luan Lacerda stopped all the takedowns from Cody Stamann, who is good at getting a takedown. Right? Like, he's a wrestler.
Yep, 100% takedown.
And here we've got Damon Blackshear, who was taken down at will by Yusuf Zalal. Not a good scene at all. And Basharat, I guess, is good too. Let me see how many takedowns Zalal had. One takedown against him. So, and then Fareed Basharat was the one owning him on the takedowns. But nonetheless, Yusuf Zalal kind of dominated him in their fight. And I don't agree that this was a draw. I don't, what happened in that fight? Like that, why do you guys know why that fight was called a draw?
I think there was a 10-8 round.
Was there a point taken away? Like, what happened in that fight?
I think so. It was a majority decision, so I assume it was a 10-8 round.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Because one judge, if it's majority, one judge ruled it a draw. So.
Yeah, something that
or two judges rather.
Oh, really, this was a draw. So I don't remember. I think there was a point taken away, but all I know is Yusuf Zalal, not that good. It's not a good look to be going to draws against that guy. So with that being said, Big Marley, they look kind of similar in the grappling. But what's going on with Lacerda that all the money's rolling in on him and continuing to roll in? It seems like as you look at what the line chart is looking like, and it is all about that Luan.
Yeah, I mean, I'm on the Lacerda side here. I don't know if there's any value left at this point, but I do think he is just the better all-around fighter. Before he got to the UFC, he was just taking guys down and dominating them on the ground. He's got 10 submission wins of his 12 total wins, I believe. And he looks real good on the ground. And my worry with him against Stamann is that he just wouldn't be able to get takedowns against a better wrestler. And if you're not getting takedowns, you're probably going to get outstruck, which did happen, but he looked better on the feet than I thought he would look. And I thought he looked better on the feet than Blackshear has looked on the feet. So I give him the striking edge. I give him the grappling edge as well. I don't know that he has the wrestling to get the fight to the ground, but Blackshear's primarily a grappler as well. He might want to go for the takedowns himself. So I'm just going to be on the Lacerda side. I think he is better all around. Higher volume all around, too, and just has more ways to dominate this fight. If he can get an early takedown, I think he can keep the fight there the rest of the round or finish it in any round. So give me Lacerda. 87, it's a tough price to pay, but on a card where we don't really care about salary, I think I'll get a decent amount of Lacerda. I don't know if I want to be, you know, too overweight to the field, but I do want exposure to him, and I don't have a lot of interest in Blackshear, so I might end up fading him. Because there are a lot of underdogs on this card that I like.
Monk, do you think we need a Blackshear on a card like this? You know, it's a salary saver, I guess. I mean, I feel like he's another super underpriced fighter for the plus 128, but there's just a lot of that on this card.
Yeah, exactly. And man, I just think he has to prove himself here. That we are getting a good price, and I think you can be like play him from a contrarian type of viewpoint here. So I wouldn't mind a little bit, especially if he can come in and is the more active wrestler and can get Lacerda down. He has a chance to score well in a decision, I think. And he has scored well in his draw and his loss, around 40 points each. And when he, let's see, when he lost, actually Lacerda, when Lacerda lost to Stamen, that was an extremely close fight, and he only allowed like 72 points, I think, Cody Stamen is all. 72 points is all Cody Stamen scored. I like the upside of Lacerda here. He's got the better strength of schedule overall in his last five. I like Blackshear. I think, I don't know if that Zalal fight was short notice, but I know that was his debut fight. He looked okay, nothing special there. And then Basharat, I think those Basharat brothers are no joke. So he did take three takedowns in that fight, and he took one against Zalal. So if Lacerda is going to be the more active one trying to go for takedowns here, I think Blackshear is going to be in for a long night. And this could be a game of submission skill. I think Lacerda has a better submission game than Blackshear does, and he could be hunting for that a little bit more. So I think there's upside in the finish for Lacerda, whereas the Blackshear upside comes from landing several takedowns, a couple of takedowns at least, in over a 15-minute fight. So I like the upside for Lacerda. I think he's relatively cheap this week. 8,700 is not going to break you. And yeah, we don't necessarily need to look for salary savings quite yet. We don't need to force ourselves into positions that might not pay off. So give me Lacerda here.
This is a card where we need to focus on who will give put up lots and lots of points. Forget the salary. I'm looking for fighters that are going to score well if they win. That is the key. And that's how you're going to win your DFS. That's what we're going to find bets separately, but that's how you're going to win your DFS. So focus in on that. You said it perfect. I don't have much interest in Blackshear, to be honest with you, at his price, even for cheap, even as a value. He just, Lacerda, again, he close fight against the stud, where Damon is losing fights to guys that I don't think are good. And that is a problem.
Fighters. Yeah.
Yeah, like not good fights. So that is a bad scene. There is the third fight thing that happens sometimes where they get better in their third UFC fight. That is a phenomenon. Sorry, don't have the stats. But for some reason, guys who lose twice, like they come back for that third fight and they do well.
It's win or go home. You're done after this.
That's like a thing that does happen. So I give him his, you know, two losses, third fight, you know, a little bump that you got to give him. But it ain't a good scene here for Blackshear, in my opinion. Now, talk about ugly fights. This next one is really gross. Like, Monk, I almost want to go to you first on this one because I cannot imagine that you're going to see much worse points per minute from any women, like, in the entire UFC than these two. This is, like, where fantasy points go to die. And you can't find two worse. And I don't know why people talk about Elise Reed as high volume. She is not. So you got Elise Reed taking on Jin Yufrey. They're old. They don't throw a lot. They don't do anything. If they don't win inside the distance, this is going to be a stinker. But Jin Yufrey is plus 100. Reed is minus 120. I'm actually super curious to see the salary. Yeah, 86. Hell no. But you like these 125 pound or 150. Actually, these are 115, right? No, you don't like 115ers, Monk. But any reason to mess with Jin Yufrey versus Elise Reed on DraftKings?
Believe me, I was doing the prep for my show that will be out later today. Now that we finally have salaries, thank you, DraftKings. You did so good for a couple of weeks. And then this week, just, I don't know if it was Memorial Day, you dropped the ball. But that's beside the point. I was scrounging for good stats to read here. I thought Jin Yufrey was at least going to have the striking advantage since, you know, she has a gym where she teaches that stuff. She scores 2 points a minute, 1.56 points a minute at distance, guys. That's one of the lowest numbers on the entire card and probably one of the lowest in the division. She's getting outstruck at distance, outpaced at distance where she's supposed to shine. Her inside the distance game is non-existent. 68 per win in three-round strawweight fights. 68 points per win.
68 points? I want that from my loss.
Dude, yes, exactly. Elise Reed is killing her in points, and she's only scoring 76 per win. Elise Reed, all she does is spam left hooks. So, guys, the only thing that I can really say is Frey has good takedown defense, 89%. Excuse me, she's allowed only three takedowns out of 27 attempts. That's it. These women are both 0 for 4 as far as making the optimal. They don't even average 80 points or 70 points. And I'm not going to say anymore. Vince, you nailed it. You have to. This is the easy, just like we have a free square that we'll talk about. This is the go straight to jail square.
The free fade square.
Yeah, just do it right here. You want to let not just skip right over this one.
Big Marley, do you even want to talk about this?
I mean, not really. I'll say that. I mean, I'm picking Elise Reed to get a TKO here. Jinyu Frey's been TKO'd three times. She's just coming off a TKO loss to Pollyanna Viana, who is not a power puncher. Reed does have power, but even though I'm picking her to get a TKO, I'm not going to rely on that, especially at 8,600. I just don't see her being a top six scorer on the card. So if I'm making 150 lineups, I'm cool with 10 to 15% max just to get contrarian. But even if I'm trying to get contrarian with my single entry, it's not going to be her. I'll do something else with this fight, and Frey will be a full fade for me. Even when she got a couple takedowns and controlled the fight for 10-plus minutes, she scored 72 points. So full fade on Frey. Even though Elise Reed's biggest weakness is being put on her back, I just don't see Frey doing anything with it. So I'm a full fade her. I'll probably end up full fading Reed too, because I probably only make 10 to 20 lineups at most. But if I'm really making lineups and I have malarkey in there, I might have a Reed just to make it a contrarian malarkey lineup.
I like it. Speaking of malarkey, it's not a bunch of malarkey when I tell you that malarkey is the free square this week, because he was supposed to be fighting Guram Kudelatse, who is, you know, we all love Guram. And who doesn't love Guram? Like, literally everything about that guy is like heart and soul and everything that's awesome about
heart, UFC. Soul, and beard, baby.
Yeah, everything that's awesome about UFC, that is Guram. They should just have his picture when you look up UFC, like fucking Guram. But he's out, and instead we get some other guy that's not very good, right? Naimov is the name. Losing to Malarkey is the game. Okay, so we take a look at the odds for this fight, and last minute replacement, Mamoudzhan Naimov plus 320, Malarkey minus 385. I will say there, you know, this went from minus 550. Like, betting is happening on this. They're adjusting it a little bit right now, but effectively you're getting a minus 400, maybe minus 370, whatever it winds up, favorite for 6,700 on DraftKings. And oh, as a bonus, Malarkey scores well when he wins, or he can. There's a 96 in there. Ooh, there's a very ugly one. What the hell? Oh yeah, 109, 81, 128. This guy has put up big numbers in some wins. He doesn't score poorly in some losses. And here, I think this was a split decision against Michael Johnson, who's good. And then Prada. So any one of these scores are really fucking good for 6,700. Every win score, doesn't matter what he did. So with that being said, this is that free square. Is there now, Big Marley, is there much to talk about? Like, is this Naimov guy, is he live to get a win here? It's the last minute. Like, how much do we need to worry about this free square? Can we lose all our money because he loses?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think there's a ton of to talk about, because this is going to decide the slate, in my opinion, because we have originally the biggest underdog on the card is now the biggest favorite on the card. So you're getting like a free $2,800 here. So you're getting a $9,500 guy, which is why salary doesn't matter. But it's not only is he a free square, but everyone's going to think he's a free square. He's going to be the highest owned guy that we've ever seen, I'd imagine. He'll probably be 75% owned. And I do like a handful of underdogs on this card. If he does win, I'm not guaranteeing him to be a top six scoring guy on the card. So I think that we can make a case to get away from him in these large field GPPs, where if he goes out there and he scores 80 points in a decision win, that's probably going to kill off 75% of the field, and your chances at winning first just become that much easier. I don't think Naimov is any good, to be honest with you. I think the only advantages that I would give him are, well, I would say durability, because he's never been knocked out, and Malarkey has, but he's been wobbled in multiple fights that I saw. So, I mean, I don't know how durable he is. He just didn't get finished in them. I feel like it could be coming anytime, But I think all the skill advantage go to Malarkey here. He could win this fight by any method, but maybe he just goes out there and plays it safe and strikes for more than two full rounds and wins on the scorecards. I think that could be a big issue at 75% on. So, man, I don't know. I think he's the easiest cash game play that we've ever had. I'm going to fade Nemov unless it's like a 5% play if I'm making 150. But I think we can just make lineups without Malarkey and hope that other underdogs score more.
This is tough stuff. I'm looking at the record of Nemov here. And Monk, I'm sure you've analyzed this. But first of all, his loss, his contender series loss to Colin Anglin looks so much worse based on the run that Colin wound up having, not just in the UFC, but he lost to Sean Woodson. You just don't lose to Sean Woodson. And then out of the UFC, just the losses have continued. So, you know, Nemov has zero credible wins, nothing. Why he's in the UFC is just because he had a pulse. He was around. These wins are not credible. Tough Enough? Really? You're in Tough Enough. That's the name of the promotion that you're getting wins through. Tough Enough. I had never heard of Tough Enough until just now.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but it's not Tough Enough. It's Tough, the letter N, and then UFF.
Tough and Uff.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's the name of the promotion. I'm just saying, like, when he fought a guy who's terrible in the UFC, in Colin Anglin, he lost in dominant fashion. So this is not a guy. And Jamie Malarkey is a real UFC fighter with real UFC wins against good opponents. Michael Johnson.
I mean, yeah, I think the only way Nemov wins this fight is by knockout. He throws a lot of spinning shit, and maybe something connects. But if that doesn't happen, I just think Malarkey is going to win this fight. It's just a matter of, does he score enough to be on the optimal lineup when everyone else has him? Like, at what point does he become too owned?
That's the only part of it, right? He's so high owned, and he only scores like a 78 in this particular win. And on this card with like all even odds fights with tons of salary relief available everywhere you look, there's that chance that, hey, everybody, you know, there was a possibility of putting 6 100 point, like last week, like 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago, you had a card where a 700 wasn't even like good enough to, you know, everybody, all the winners, you know, 125, 133, you know, getting those kind of scores, and you could easily get six of them. So, you know, in that kind of card, this free square isn't going to work out. Okay. Let's move on. That is a lock button free square situation.
Hold on now. He's going to skip right over me, huh?
Wait. Oh, I didn't. Oh, yeah. Give me those numbers, Monk. How the hell?
I was going to say, I do think this is a lock. I would rather not play Malarkey because I think 75% ownership projection is probably on the low end. I think it's going to be much higher than that. I think you got to have 100% of this fight. 100%. Simply put, we've seen 22 times. I tweeted this yesterday. 22 times we've seen fights which salaries do not equal 16,200, which is what we have here. A fighter from those fights has been optimal 18 of 21 times. 15 times someone scored more than 100 points, and those fighters have a 100% optimal rate. And the higher salary is 15-7. The only thing I would argue is Malarkey might not score well, but twice the $6,700 salary has made the optimal lineup, and both times were against actual $9,500 salaries. They, on average, when they've made optimal, 80 points. So that's all they need to make the optimal is 80 points. It's such a low salary that it doesn't matter what the high salaries do. It's going to be on the optimal if it's 70, 80 points. I think that's almost close to a guarantee. I think the winner of this fight is probably going to score 70 or 80 points. So I will have close to 100%. I just think you're going to be you're not going to make the nuts, honestly, if you don't. And I hate saying that. I'm always looking to fade guys that have tons of ownership. I just think it's a mistake this week. I think Malarkey comes in here. And how lucky do you have to be to be a UFC vet and get back-to-back last-minute replacements against UFC debutants? He had, what, Prado last time or whoever it was? I don't remember if I'm getting that right. And he's Nemov this time. So, yeah, I think one of these guys makes it, even with a low score. If they score 80, I think it's almost a guarantee.
Couldn't agree more. And the only weirdness about this card, as far as like having such a free square on it, is there's no Jalton Almeida on this card. Like, there's no lock button. Oh man, I wish I could pay $9,600 because this guy's awesome. We don't have that on this card. There's no like clear cut payoff. Karimi Silva, I mean, it's not, there's nothing there. There's no Gregor Gillespie's not here. There's no Mirab. There's none of that. So
I think if there was a $9,400 person that I really wanted to get a lot of exposure to, it would make me very much more interested in Malarkey. But this is a card where I don't care about any of the payups, and I'm picking eight people priced under 8,200 on this card. So I just feel like my chances of maybe one of, you know, six of those people outscoring Malarkey, just making my shot at 100K that much easier. I don't know. I think it's worth the risk to, I don't know, I'm not going to fade him, but I'm trying to get away from him in my single entry and just make it that much easier there. And then with maybe I'll throw in 20 lineups in the DS. If it wants to throw it all in, I'll see how they look. But I'll try and do something like that where I'm hedging my single entry with the 20 lineups or vice versa.
There's quite a few sub 8,200s that are super live, not just to win, but to score well. So I agree with that. Like, there is a pathway here where you don't need to pay up. So like, that's just not the norm. Monk, you have to know these last couple cards with all these even odds fights that are flipping and like, that is not, this is just not what it's been like. This is really unique to like the last couple months where I've been playing UFC DFS on DraftKings and FanDuel since 2015. Like, these are not the norm. You don't see these kind of cards. It's usually like, hey, let me punt a couple spots to pay up for these studs like last week. But it's just not going that way here. So it's just really weird. And it's going to be interesting to see how that affects things. But yeah, I mean, Malarkey, though, his upside is 100 plus. Like, I don't think he's any less capable of putting up 120 than the most expensive fighter on this card. I think it's within the realm of shit that could happen.
True. However,
yeah,
Naimov has never been finished. Malarkey is coming off a win where he was fighting a guy who had never even been out of like the first or second round before. And he only scored, what did he score? Like 82 points?
Score. Yeah, it was a bad score. No question.
That's very in play here again, you know, 80 sub 80 again. And I just don't think that makes the optimal.
Yeah, that's weird. That's weird because then on the other side, you've got him smashing Devontae Smith and smashing Kama Worthy.
That's what I'm saying.
Well over 100 points. So he's way up and he's way down. Like,
it's in the range.
If he was like 30%, I'm all in. Yeah. But if he's near 80, I just don't know that I want anything to do with that.
It's in the range of outcomes for him. Now, speaking of underdogs that I kind of like, we got a few of them coming up here, a couple of them in a row, but I'm going to start off with this next fight. John Castaneda taking on Muin Gafarov. And that's right. You are seeing that correctly. This is an of, meaning we get what I assume is a Dagestani wrestling maniac here taking on John Castaneda as an underdog. So right off the bat, I'm like, how do I bet this? Because I don't like my WrestleManiac Dagestanis as underdogs. I always want to bet that, right? Let's take a look at some of the numbers. This one doesn't have inside the distance odds. This is a very, very new fight. I don't even think it's available to bet on DraftKings. I tried to bet this last night on DraftKings. He was not there yet. So I don't know if that's happening. But Castaneda, minus 126. Comeback on Gafarov, plus 106. Let's see if we can get a little bit of information on these guys. Yeah, look at that. Look at the beard. What is he missing, Monk? He does not have a mustache.
Yeah, exactly. That's how you know.
That's how you know. Mm-hmm. This guy is a WrestleManiac. But if you take a look at the stats, do back that up. The stats do back it up. 5 takedowns per 15 minutes against the guy in Castaneda, Big Marley, with 60% takedown defense over a large sample size. Like, what am I missing here? How is this guy the underdog? Big Marley, what's
going on? Well, I'd say the underdog because he got those 5 takedowns against Chad Anheliger, whatever his name is, and he lost. And Castaneda beats Chad Anheliger. So that's the issue. But, I mean, he's young. He was like 26 years old in that fight. He definitely slowed down. Like, his wrestling was not as good in round 3 as it was in round 1. But Castaneda is coming off a loss where he slowed down and got finished. So I just don't know how much better Castaneda's gas tank will be. It is a short notice fight for whatever his name is.
He's not fought. He hasn't fought in a minute either. It's not like this guy was just fighting. You know, his last fight was back in November of 2022. So he has not fought in over 7 months. So.
Yeah, and so I mean, the cardio is really the main worry for me. Like taking this fight on short notice, really all he likes to do is just wrestle. And when he's on the feet, he's throwing power into everything he does. So just what he does in the octagon is going to be tiring. So if he is not prepared for a 15-minute fight, I just see him being the one that slows down and Castaneda being the one to maybe finish him late or win a decision by keeping this fight on the feet. But I do give Castaneda the striking advantage. I give Gafurov the wrestling and grappling advantage. But yeah, I mean, I'm leaning towards a guy who I think can control this fight. If the cardio is there, I think Gafurov can win 2 rounds on the scorecards, if not all 3. I also think he could finish this fight. He's finished 17 of his 18 wins. That's great for DraftKings. And him going for takedowns as much as he goes for is great for DraftKings. I believe he went for 12 in that contender series fight. So
I love it.
You just like to see that. Anybody who's willing to go for 10-plus takedowns is what we like to see in DraftKings. He's a finisher. So I'm going to side with the underdog here. I like Gafurov. I'll be overweight there. But I also want some Castaneda exposure just because I don't trust him, to be honest. So.
It's crazy that we're getting Gafurov at plus money, dog odds effectively on DraftKings, which against the guy, again, in Sexy Mexi, that has been bad at stopping. Like, he's not good at stopping takedowns. That is not his skill set. He's not that good at it. 60% takedown defense, Monk. The machine, the betting machine, will like Gafurov quite a bit.
I would imagine, and I like him too, actually, here. Castaneda his opponents that he's beaten in the UFC, Miles Johns, okay. Eddie Wineland. All right, come on now. Like,
we're
just completely. And he's lost to Daniel Santos, who's also on this card that I'm sure we're talking about pretty shortly. Gafurov does have the cardio issue, but that fight with Anheliger, like you said, was a while back. He's fought twice since then, and I believe he's gotten finishes in the second and third round. So he's gone, you know, close to 10 minutes on average, probably, in those previous two fights here. I just like Gafurov for the takedown upside and the big finish upside as well. What else can you ask for DraftKings here? He's outscoring, let's see, his opponent. And in fact, that's what I was going to say. He might have lost that fight against Anheliger. I don't know what – he got knocked down, according to the stats, but also according to the stats, he put it on Anheliger and should have won that fight. Like, the stats say it was a pretty clear win for Gafurov.
I was going to say, I'm not convinced that he lost that fight.
I think he did because he won round one, but then he just started slowing down so much. And in the third round, he tried to get a takedown, and he fell on his back, and he was on his back the rest of the time. So it was just enough time and I guess punishment from Anheliger to get the win. But, it was close. It would have been, if you had 3 different judges, it could have definitely gone the other way.
Yeah, and he landed 5 takedowns in that fight, 51% control time over those 15 minutes. That's what I'm looking for here against Castaneda, because the last stat I will give you here, if I can find where my cursor is, Castaneda inside the distance at the weight class, allowing 5.25 points a minute. That's one of the highest allowances on the entire card. Meanwhile, Gafurov scoring 4.25 points a minute against Chad Anheliger there. So there's a huge there's an easy path to victory for Gafurov. Give me that Tajik wrestling all day, and maybe we'll even get a finish once he's on the ground with some grounded pounds. So actually, the real last stat I'll give you, Castaneda scores 81.6% of his total DraftKings points at distance. That is a gigantic number, meaning he does not score any. If he scores inside the distance, it's an accident. Gafurov scored 78% of his total points inside the distance. It's a pretty clear path for me for Gafurov, and I like the underdog here.
I'm just going to say this is my first official bet on this card. I am betting.
I like it.
Gafurov. I like my odds. He is from Tajikistan, which to me is the same shit as Dagestan.
I mean, don't say that to him, I'm sure, but
I don't know that there's geographically. I mean, like if you ask me to point to where those places are, I don't know how to differentiate. Yeah. It's the same.
One's under Russia and one's like over here.
By where Russia like by where Russia is.
Yeah.
You know, that's it. But they're the same. It's the same stock. You know, and this guy, when you talk about a guy gassing after getting achieving five takedowns and going for 10. Okay. Like he's a human being. All right. He's not Marab. There's only one person or two that can do that and hold up in round three and still have energy. And that's like Marab Dawashvili. And pretty much that's it. So, you know, maybe Gregor, a boy, but that's it. So anyway, I love that fight. Love Gafarov for DraftKings purposes. And I bet him or will be betting him as soon as DraftKings drops the number. And I'm hoping to get plus money on that. All right. Next up, another low scoring potential fade fight. But where I prefer the dog, maybe, I don't know. Really, Big Marley, you got to talk me through this one. Andrei Arlovsky, Dontel Mays. You know, Arlovsky's the underdog here, plus 120. Mays, minus 140. You know, let's take a look at the inside the distance here. Just fight goes the distance. An ugly minus 170. You know, what do you do? One guy's 44. The other guy's just not very good, but probably can hit pretty hard, Big Marley. They're big dudes. Do I need a piece of this fight?
I hope not, because I'm going to fade it. I just don't want anything to do with this fight. We got 44-year-old Arlovsky versus a guy who I don't think even belongs in the UFC. I don't know what people see in this guy to make him a favorite again. I mean,
he humped a man to death.
Percent favorite. Like, he's probably the faster fighter. He's definitely younger. But even with 44 years old, I give Arlovsky probably every edge in MMA. So I'm going to take the underdog. I just don't see him scoring well. I'm going to X this fight out of my player pool, hope that it goes the distance. And if it does, neither one of these guys will score well.
Dontel May. What is this? What is this belt that he's walking around with? Like, is this one? Is this a UFC? Is this a WWF, you know, promote? What do you call it? Like one of those fake belts that you go out and buy? What is this?
Yeah, he's probably just bought that in the back of some, you know, regional.
I have
scene
one of those here. He won his fantasy football league. That's what that is.
Yeah.
You ever get a belt for your fantasy league? Monk, I mean, the scoring is horrible for these guys. You know, Arlovsky, decision machine for so many years, has the one crazy fight outlier against what's his name? The fatty Ben Rothwell. That was a crazy outlier. Remember that fight where he just was landing hundreds of strikes? What happened then? But beyond that, I mean, is this guy even rosterable? But I think Arlovsky's going to win the fight.
Yes, but if I'm a betting man, which I am from time to time, Arlovsky split decision. I mean, how could you not sprinkle on that? And Arlovsky by decision is also a pretty good bet. I agree with you. I like Arlovsky here. Now, that said, he is unrosterable in his, you know, four-fight win streak. Guess how many points he scored on average in those four fights. I'll just tell you, 65.9 in these decision fights, his four-fight win streak, which, by the way, was against, listen to this,
the worst of
Collier, Vandera, Felipe, and Sherman. Felipe is hands and feet the best fighter in that list.
These are the worst of the worst.
Oh, the worst of the worst. Yes. And then he lost to Rogério de Lima. I mean, long story short, I don't know how you could roster Arlovsky at all. I will have 0% of him. Like Marley said, he's also 44 years old. Now, that said, the brakes have to come off at some point. Mays is, you know, a hard hitter if, you know, he connects with you in the first, I don't know, 90 seconds, you know, 180 seconds, something like that. So I will be rostering a bit of Mays just in case. But that's it. I'm not looking forward to any of this. I mean, Mays has a much better upside for DraftKings than Arlovsky, but he's got to win the fight. He lost to Sakai.
That's the worst of the worst.
Lost to Nascimento. Lost to Abdelwahab, who was, you know, roided up beyond belief, probably. But the Sakai loss, I think this is pretty comparable to that. So Mays looked awful in that fight, dude. I was all over him. And Sakai just worked him over. So Arlovsky split decision or Arlovsky decision?
People liked Mays in that fight.
Dude, Sakai dropped like five in a row. It was crazy. Yeah, no,
people were so down on Sakai.
That's why we got gifted with that line.
Actually had one of my biggest bets of the year on Sakai. And then I feel like one of you guys were scaring me off of it a little bit. And then were you scaring me off the Sakai bet?
probably.
I don't get it.
He shouldn't even be in the UFC.
I was just like, I'm just fading Dontell Mays. This has nothing to do with Sakai. I feel the same way now. I'm very comfortable fading Dontell Mays, even against the 44-year-old Andrei Arlovsky. And give me the plus money.
Yeah.
I'm taking it.
Lesson learned over here. Never again.
Yeah, I'm taking it. I'm taking the plus money.
I don't know if I'll bet a money line, but I mean, that split decision prop, definitely going to be looking at that. Same as a decision.
Or you could just do Andrei by decision. I bet Andrei by decision is not you can get some juice on that. Let's see.
200.
Yeah, plus 200.
I'll take that. Arlovsky by decision plus 150 here. I'll take that all day. I don't think he's going to get a finish. I might just take our Andrei straight though. I don't know. I might just take the straight, but I don't think he knocks out or finishes anybody.
So plus 120. Yeah, you might as well.
It's kind of, if it's plus 120 or plus 150, I think I'm going to take the plus 120 and allow for the weird submission that happens. Like, give me that possibility too. All right. So that was pretty easy. I'm fading Mays. You could play Mays on DraftKings a little bit, just if you think Andre's old and at some point somebody's going to touch him and he's going to go to sleep. And if Mays does that, you're going to miss out on that 100 pointer, but that is super unlikely in my, opinion. All right. Next up, we finally have what is kind of a favorite. This is one of the biggest favorites on the card. Daniel Santos, minus 220, taking on Johnny Munoz Jr., plus 185. Right? The fight ends inside the distance is a solid minus 215. A lot of people compare. I think this is the Daniel Santos. So a lot of people compare him to DuBronx. And Big Marley, you're a big DuBronx guy. Is this guy similar to Oliveira? Why am I seeing those comparisons all over the place?
Because he had yellow shorts and blonde hair in his last fight.
Does he look Brazilian?
He looks like Charles DuBronx physically, maybe.
Yeah, they look similar. What is the connection there?
Nothing. I mean, he's aggressive. He's an aggressive striker. Charles DuBronx is an aggressive striker, but no, I wouldn't compare them stylistically at all.
Don't know.
Yeah, and I mean, sheesh. I don't understand why he's as much of a favorite as he is. He's more of a favorite this time than he was the last time these guys were paired up, and he's the one who pulled out of the fight.
What changed?
Why did he pull out? Do we know?
I've heard sickness and I've heard injury. So okay. I'm not sure. Either way, I mean, it's not great.
No.
It doesn't lean like, oh, man, now he's got a freaking 5% better chance to win than he did last time.
We don't know at all why he pulled out of the fight. There is no information on that the first time.
I just didn't really look into it. I just figured I really didn't even re-look into the fight. I'm just going off of what I went with last time. But I picked Munoz last time, and now he's a bigger underdog than he was then. So I'm still sticking with Munoz here. I think that it's just a little bit of hype on the Santos side because he had a nice knockout in his last fight. But I mentioned earlier that Castaneda was gassing out at that point in that fight. It was a very high-paced fight, and he dropped the first round. He got knocked down in the first round, and then he did the chicken dance later in the round, and a different ref could have stopped that fight for sure. And then he goes in and finishes him towards the end of the second round after Castaneda is really slowing down. However, this guy has 4 completed rounds in the UFC and he's lost all of them. He got outworked big time, almost outlanded by 100 strikes by Arce. And people are like, oh, but that's Julio Arce. Julio Arce is not that good.
Yeah, who the hell is Julio Arce? What?
Yeah, so I just don't understand it. And I think that Munoz can have success every round on the ground. I think Santos was taken down 2 times, at least in that first round against Castaneda. I think Munoz can have that same success, and he won't be gassing himself out trying to finish the guy at the end of the round with his hands either. So I think he can have that same success for 3 rounds and win with a good score and a decision. I think he could also submit this guy along the way. I do give Santos the edge on the feet. So if Munoz can't keep him on the ground if Munoz can't keep him on the ground and Santos keeps getting up, he's live for a knockout at some point. But Munoz has only been knocked out 1 time. I'm not relying on that. Give me the guy who I think can control the fight, who is now an even bigger underdog than he was before. So I like Munoz here.
There it is. Monk, anything popping for you on these guys?
I like this fight as a whole. Excuse me. I think this is one you definitely have to target. You just said Munoz did get knocked down once. That was kind of an interesting knockout. Gravely, like, touched his chin, and the dude just went down. That was it. I think he caught him in, finished with some ground and pound, I believe. I'm not... That brings me hesitation. That
you can't get right there. Getting knocked out by Gravely is not a good scene.
Yeah, especially when it didn't even look
like Gravely is powerful as shit. I think Gravely's got more power than Santos.
It looked like he must have hit him on the button, because it didn't look like a crazy punch or anything. It was no Ngannou type knockout. You know what I'm saying? That said, Munoz has two wins in the UFC. One of them's a finish, but he only scored 91 points in that fight. 83 against Shalinian. He's only scoring 87 points per win. I don't know what to think about that. At 7K, I do actually not mind that. So that's why I will have a lot of Munoz here. He does have a ton of grappling upside, as you mentioned there, Marley. Santos also has a ton of finish equity as well. Like I just said, Munoz been chin checked. Santos is definitely a guy that could chin check you as long as it doesn't happen to him first, as we discussed. But he put up 119 against Castaneda. So yeah, that was a crazy fight. But much akin to like a Frivola fight, maybe. The more action, the higher the score is for these guys. So I think you got to play both sides of this one. I love this fight for DraftKings. 9,200, usually it would bring question marks with this fight. But again, with the quote-unquote free square and a lot of the cheaper guys that we do like this week, I don't think that's too expensive at all. And I will have a lot of both sides of this fight.
To me, the lack of a need to play someone like Santos is part of the reason why salaries don't matter on this card at all. This isn't some, like, if this was the championships, I would be nervous as hell starting Santos in that lineup. Like a one-off, you have to choose, do I trust this guy even at minus 220? And the answer is no. Neither one of these fighters has a notable win. Neither of them. No, none of these wins are notable. The Santos wins, again, I know, WikiCap, I don't care. His wins against nobody, he's losing to nothings. And he Castaneda, I like a sexy Mexi. He's got an awesome name. But beyond that, he has no notable wins in the UFC. And Johnny Munoz Jr., these two wins are like, you remember Jamie Simmons? Come on.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what else Jamie Simmons is doing? He's losing to everybody else. And this other dude, Ludovic Shaolin, this guy's losing all of his fights lately. Like, this is not a guy who's coming off wins. He takes a loss on The Ultimate Fighter, takes a loss to Jack Short. Listen, acceptable. And then you're losing to Jack. And it's like, all right, this is not a guy who belongs in the UFC. These are low-level fighters. The problem is they're both low-level. And so it's like, oh, this guy's not that good. He's low-level. But then you look at the opponent, he's also low-level. So, you know, it's a bit of a dice roll for me. Way more of a dice roll than the salaries on DraftKings imply. And way more, even a little bit more. Like, if I had to bet this, Big Marley, if you're betting this, you got to take the plus money. No? Like, are you laying minus 220 on Wiley Cat?
I'm of course not. But yeah, I haven't bet it yet, but I'm sure I will be betting.
Yeah, you bet the dog. You're not betting the favorite here. If you're taking a stab, I don't care. Even if you didn't say you liked Munoz from before, if you're taking a stab, you're taking a stab on the underdog because this looks like maybe it's a coin flip. I don't know.
I was going to say, if you're playing strictly DraftKings, you got to go 50-50. If you're on one side or the other, you're like, I'm going to play 40% Santos. You got to play 40% Moon, in my opinion. Like, just match them.
I've got no
confidence. I do want a good amount of hedge exposure to Santos, especially because just don't like the 9K range. So I want a lot of hedge exposure because I will be overweight to Munoz for sure.
There are a lot of freaking fights on this card. It is bananas. Like,
and this,
I feel like we're going through fight after fight after fight, and we're just like not even getting through the list.
This is a great pivot off that free square. You don't want to play malarkey. Get your butt in on some Munoz.
Yeah, 100%. I as like I said, this is the reason why you don't have to be as much as 20, I love malarkey. He's going to win his fight. 20%. Yeah, he's going to win his fight. But let's see what the ownership comes out to for him. All right. Next up. Again, 50-50 odds here. So let me bring up the odds table here. But we got Zaleski Dos Santos taking on Abubakar Nurmagomedov. Ooh, Nurmagomedov. I love that last name. -110. Even odds fight, which is like, really? Okay. Fight goes the distance, -180. Okay. That's a little surprising, right? Minus 180. These are two big dudes down to throw fists. So Big Marley, I mean, I'm assuming, and I'm going to assume this. I know Nurmagomedov is not like, he's no Khabib, right? He's wrestling is not that level, but he does have the last name and he does. He's got the beard and he likes to wrestle and he's got the name. Is this what is even odds? I mean, what's the story? How does this fight play out? Is this grappler striker? Is Abu Bakar going to throw strikes in this thing?
Yeah, I think it mainly plays out on the feet, striker versus striker, but I do give Nurmagomedov the wrestling edge. But I give the striking edge to Dos Santos here. I actually give the grappling edge to Dos Santos here. And Nurmagomedov can just shoot himself right into a guillotine sometimes. I think that's very in play. I think Dos Santos is more in play for the knockout. But I just think he's the cleaner, slicker, faster striker who's going to be landing more volume on the feet, and I like him to be the minute winner here. So I favor him a little bit in this fight. So he's going to be my pick. I probably end up fading Nurmagomedov. I don't see him finishing Dos Santos here, and he's never landed more than one takedown in the UFC. I don't see him landing a whole lot here. So I'd rather fade the name and look to other underdogs. Like I mentioned, I'm picking 8 people or something like that below 8K. He's not one of them, so I'll probably fade the ones that I'm not picking for the most part, other than one who I really have my eye on as a possible big score, but I'm picking him to lose. But I do have some interest in Easy DS here because I think he could finish on the feet or the ground and score well that way, and he's just not priced super highly to where he could score fine in a decision. But I do see him winning a decision, and I don't know that he's even going to 10X if that's the case. So I'll probably look elsewhere for the majority of my lineups.
Yeah, Easy D, man. It's hard to ignore a fight like this at like 8K, 7,900. But again, salary's not super important. High decision prop monk. So, you know, the odds makers don't love this one to finish. I'm going to tell you something. Based on these stats, I don't think you want to have too much exposure to this. Like, you, Dolesky Dos Santos pretty much needs a finish.
Yeah, I agree. I was looking for an angle to play this one, and honestly, I did record my video, part of my video earlier, and this is one of the fights I did record, and I mentioned that I think a lot of people are going to roster 5 girls and guys, 5 fighters, and then they're going to come to that last spot, and they're going to just slot in one of these guys. They're going to have 86, 85, 8,300 left over. And I think this is the fight they're just going to be like, well, give me the Nurmagomedov or give me Zaleski. You know, they'll go anti-Nurmagomedov. So I'm in agreement with you. I think this fight is going to be over-owned as a whole, and I will look to go under it. Zaleski is constantly outpaced overall, inside the distance, at distance, outpaced. Meanwhile, Nurmagomedov, while not scoring well, he's outpacing his opponents everywhere and allowing just 1 point per minute inside the distance, where Zaleski closer to 5. Meanwhile, the DraftKings points per win is pretty much non-existent for both guys. 73 for Nurmagomedov, 82 for Zaleski. So I'm not looking really to play any part of these guys. Last thing I'll say is Zaleski has the better strength of schedule, but has the worst takedown defense, as you would expect. Just 62% allowing 19 takedowns here. Nurmagomedov controlled 50% of his last fight. If it goes the Nurmagomedov, I'm leaning Nurmagomedov, but hopefully I think this goes to decision. Winner scores 80 points, and we don't have to worry about it. This one will probably be, like I said, overowned, and I will look to use that to my advantage and go under.
Yeah, just my final take here. Yeah, Nurmagomedov has not had more than one takedown in a UFC fight so far, which is a bad scene if your last name is Nurmagomedov. And these were decisions. So outside of the first one against where he lost, the other two fights, Jared Gordon, so like, he just doesn't use the grappling. I think he will use more of it, though. Are you going to really stand and strike with Zaleski Dos Santos? I think we might see a trend change here where he goes in and goes, man, this guy hits hard. Maybe I should be focusing the wrestling. So there is that path. I think Nurmagomedov is the better DraftKings play. That's the side I'm going to lean, primarily because, and this is a hopium play, where you're hoping that the guy will grapple more because he's facing an opponent. Wait, do I have my hopium?
Just depends on the fight IQ. We wish for that every week with these fighters, and they
yeah,
they let us down time after. Who is it? Curtis Blades decided to not wrestle against Pavlovich.
Yeah, you're like, what are you doing, bro? Why would you go up against Pavlovich?
Mad hopium in that fight.
Hopium. Oh, I don't have my hopium graphic anymore. All right, I'll have to make a new one for next year. Hopium. You remember that? It doesn't matter. All right. So anyway, it's a bit of hopium that we're smoking. That Nurmagomedov will be like, hey, I'm not going to stand. I'm going to just go grapple crazy. But he has not done that at all. And there's no reason to expect him to do it here. All right.
Well, we did control his last fight for 9 minutes. He only scored 72 DraftKings points. So it's just not my style of wrestler either.
Yeah, that's ugly. You know, that's the ugly control, right? How did he do it, though? Against Gadzmirat? I guess because Gadzi was going for takedowns, getting reversals or pushing him up in the corner. So, again, not a good scene.
It's just no striking. There's no rabbit punching. There's nothing.
Yeah, you're not getting the little love taps. By the way, like
huge a la Mackenzie Dern twice in a row now.
I was gonna say Dern in the same scenario with the little love taps
all week. Last week, people were like, how did she score 130 and then she scores 150? It's because of that.
Well, she also, you know,
was like 30% of her total points come from non-significant strikes. It's crazy.
We got to talk about spousal betrayals soon and the anger and fire that that puts in your belly to win a fight,
or the like devastation and loss that you feel.
It's one or the other, right? But we've seen it both ways. We've seen, you know, the Mackenzie Dern version where she comes out like, I've never seen, who is this? I was watching that fight going, I never saw her do this. What, she's beating the crap out of Angela Hill on the feet. She don't even need a takedown. I'm like, Angela, get a takedown. Cause I had a bet on Angela Hill. I was like, Angela, go for a takedown against Dern. Who thinks that way? So here we go. Karini Silva taking on Ketlin Souza. Silva minus 225 with the comeback on Souza plus 190. Fight ends inside the distance, an acceptable but not great minus 150. And Big Marley, we've got another fight in my mind where I don't think, Karini Silva, she's a favorite, but like she has no notable wins either. This was a prospect. She looks good, but Ketlin Souza, you talk about no notable wins. Ketlin Souza, nothing. There's nothing to look at here that says she's good, she's bad. I can't tell because she's only fought trash cans. What do you think? How does this one go down? And can we trust the odds on Karini Silva here showing her as such a heavy favorite?
I don't know if we can trust the odds, but I do think she is, a fairly sized favorite because Souza to me just looked like a striker. And I think Botello is a better striker who Silva just beat. So I really just don't see Souza knocking her out. And I think it would be just a close striking match because Silva's decent on the feet too. I think it would be really close back and forth. And if Souza were to win, it would just be her getting two rounds with her hand raised because Silva didn't look to take the fight to the ground. But I think the biggest edge in this fight is Silva's grappling, or just if she can get on the ground and finish her with some ground and pound just by not being able to defend herself. That's how I see the fight going at some point. She just doesn't wrestle as much as I would want her to for being a good fighter on the ground. But she has 15 wins. All 15 of those wins are finishes. You love to see that. So I think she can finish again here. But if she's smart, she takes the fight to the ground early and she can look like a -225 or -225 favorite. So I'm going to be on the Silva side more so because I hate the 9K range this week. And she's somebody I have no problem paying up for. I'd probably end up overweight to her. And I think she could put up 100 again with another finish.
You know, I like it when fighters that are going up against a submission specialist like Silva have been submitted before. I this one has not been submitted before, but again, she's fought some pretty poor quality. Now, Monk, before we get into the numbers, I need you to explain to me something. In this photograph here, right, what is this strap? What is that leading to? Is she wearing a bikini? Is there a cup on? What is that?
Is that a tan line?
What is it? Is it a tan line? Is that what that is?
It can't be a tan line. That's whiter than I am.
Probably.
What is this strap? What is that carrying? Like you're going to work out. Like, you know how women used to like, is that a thong? Like you're showing up. What is that?
Yeah, man. Remember in the '80s when they wore their shit all the way.
Is a fighter. She's wearing fighter gear. She's like going to the gym training with her bikini thong. Pull it. No. What?
That's free range motion, brother.
I don't know what the fuck.
100%.
Been disturbing me all week. She's wearing a thong to the gym with what? No, no, it can't be. Is there a cup? Why would a woman be wearing? What is that? Anyway, tell me about the fight.
I like this fight. Honestly, I like the Silva side. I think she can do it again. Souza, I think, I don't know. We might have to check, scroll down. I have her as being subbed once. So that's all I need. Or not Silva, Souza rather. Souza.
I got no, unless Fabian, unless this one was a sub, this was a.
Yeah, I was thinking she was submitted once, but I didn't see it.
You scroll up a little bit because Tapology is the one that told me so.
Yeah, I ain't seeing any
more. One more. Scroll up a little more. Right there. One submission loss. Somewhere.
You look at this part and not this part here that shows the actual fights because.
Yeah, bro, that? I got shit to do. I'm efficient.
Maybe it's against. No. First of all, you lost to a one.
I think if you look on Sherdog, it shows submission there too.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Maybe she lost by submission to this 1-3 opponent. But I got to say, that is not a good scene either.
Either way, I'm not impressed. I'm all over the Silva side here. I'm going to have a ton of salary left on the table, so I'm not going to have a problem getting to her. Botello, say what you want about her. She has 7 fights in the UFC, so she's an established vet. Silva handled her no problem. Now she's going against someone with the worst strength of schedule on the entire card. Yeah, I like Silva here. I think she can get it done again. Hopefully in the first round. 15 finishes is amazing. Even 3 of her 4 losses are finishes, so only 1 decision in her entire career. So she knows how to not get it taken to the judges. Last thing I'll say, and I say this every week, you heard it right here, DFS Army Kill Shot Podcast. Women's flyweight fights, guys, you gotta target them. Third best overall when it comes to making the optimal lineup. We've got featherweights at 56.8%. We've got middleweights, 53.5%. Then it's women's flyweights at 53%, by far the most under-owned category because everyone hates on women's fights. So play a bunch of this fight. Play a bunch of Silva. Play the other side just in case something crazy happens, like 5%, and you should be good here. But I like Silva overall.
I like Silva as well, and I think she could get another submission
win.
If you needed to bet this fight, it would have to be I don't like, for example, Santos in my safety, like a safe, what I call my shitter parlay, but I do like Silva in there. I think that's a safe win. And I think if I needed to bet this straight, I'd want to be looking for Silva by submission, which let's see what we got here. Yeah,
90% of my cash.
I like this number, dude. This is what I'm betting right here. Yeah. I'm taking Silva by submission. She wins by sub more often than not. I get +175. If I don't, you know, I don't have to pay -220. I'm getting +175. Got to win that once out of every 3 or 2.5 tries to make money. I will take my chances on Silva by submission here. Mm-hmm. All right. Talking about divorce. So, Big Marley or Monk? I don't know how deep you guys are into the drama behind the scenes of MMA. I'm asking because I don't fully know the story here. My understanding is Tim Elliott, wife that was cheating with another UFC fighter. He's mad and he's going to take it out on Victor Altamirano. That is what the man is saying on his Instagram. So do we believe in stuff like that? Big Marl, you believe in that? Channel your anger on your next opponent.
I mean, I'm not going to take that into my handicapping on this fight.
Should.
Well, I don't know. I mean, do you take it into account that, man, he's just mad. He's going hard in the gym right now, or is his brain fucked up and he's not learning anything, or he's staying away from the
gym? Hasn't been focused for days.
I have no idea.
All of those, but right? Both of those are real things, right?
I'm not one to cap unknowns. So remember, like, I just have no idea. Like if I had some insight, if someone told me He's at the gym 6 days a week. The guy never slows down. I'd be all right. Be all right with that. But I just don't know. I don't trust him.
Here's what I do know. Back in the day when Elliott was like a lunatic, he'd put up monster scores on DraftKings. Mm-hmm. And then James Krause gets his grubby fingers on him. And some trainers get in there and say, calm down, bro. You got to fight to win. Decision fighter. And Tim Elliott went from DraftKings gold to DraftKings disaster, right? Did not put up any points. Won a couple fights. Okay, good for you. But what the hell are these kind of scores, man? This is the same Tim Elliott that back in the day, he was getting 12 takedowns against Luis Smolka. There's another one in here. There you go. Remember these two fights? Papizian, 133. Like, this guy used to put up numbers that you've never seen before. And monster scores, right? And then he's like, no, I'm going to fight to win now, which is great. He's got a bunch of wins. But it didn't lead to the monster scores. Still good scores, but not as good. I don't know. Altamirano, not that good. I'm just saying, Monk. I like the crazed pace version of Tim Elliott from back in the day. And maybe we get that here. He's got no holds barred.
Yeah. I mean, I think DraftKings is the place to like him, though, because if he wins, he probably scores well on DraftKings. But I don't get lining somebody as a 64% favorite when they haven't even won 60% of their fights. So I just don't see any value on the Elliott side. I don't even see any big skill advantages for him either. I do favor him mostly on the mat. They're both awkward strikers, but Altamirano is probably the one landing more on the feet. So I don't feel good about Elliott winning a striking match. And Elliott could be taken down himself. So I don't know. I think it's going to be a high-paced, back-and-forth fight where either one of them could land a lot of takedowns. Altamirano was taken down. He was either taken down five times and then he took his opponent down four times or vice versa on the Contender Series. And he's also had some success wrestling in the UFC. I just want to target this fight fairly heavily on DraftKings because I think the winner has a good chance at 90-plus points here with 120-plus upside. So I'll be heavy on both sides. The odds made me pick out to Murano, though. If I'm betting this fight, I'm taking the underdog. I just think that it's closer to a coin flip than Vegas does, so I'll take Altamirano, but I don't care about salary on this card, so if I have Malarkey in my lineup, I probably don't go Malarkey and Altamirano a whole lot, so I'm more likely to go Elliott in those types of lineups and get my Elliott exposure there on DraftKings because he does have a high ceiling, so give me a lot of this fight. Should be high-paced, should score well. Give me the underdog.
You know, before I heard about the out-of-the-octagon stuff with Elliott, I thought Altamirano was like, I was shocked at the number. Why? I was like, Elliott's a heavy favorite against anyone. Shouldn't be. But against this guy who's looked pretty good. So this looked like was going to be my favorite underdogs until I heard about this stuff. And by the way, normally hearing about Monk, like what you just said, normally hearing about off the field stuff, I don't allow it to affect me. But Dern turned into a monster. Like I saw like a Dern come out last week that I've never seen before. I'm like, what? But maybe that was only women. Maybe men don't react that way.
What did JP Bays turn into?
Well, that was disgusting. Yeah.
Okay.
So work out. But he sucked.
So regardless. This is going to be Mackenzie Dern or JP Bays situation.
Yeah.
I lean JP Bays, to be honest. And if you didn't hear, his wife, I believe, was Randa Marcos. Is this true? So another fighter. She cheats on him with not only another fighter, but his best friend.
Gina Mazzani.
Sorry, I apologize.
Yeah, hold on.
Sorry,
Randa Marcos. Not
Gina Mazzani. Don't mean to throw her into the mix. Sorry about that. But yeah. But I'm pretty sure his best friend is into like family functions. This dude's doing stuff like at his wedding, like
yeah,
one of his good friends, and they've been together for quite a while now. So yeah, Kevin Crew. So I think this is probably a devastating thing. The dude is 36 years old already, almost 37 in another 6 months. Yeah, I think it goes the opposite way in this one, man. I'm going to be super heavy on this fight, much like Marley is, but I'm going to be so heavy on Altamirano. It's not even going to be funny. He's the one that's made the optimal lineup. He's the one putting up 133 points in a win. He even scored decently against Salvador, 88 points. You say that's not great. Well, it was great enough that night to land him on the optimal lineup. He's averaging 111 per win. Yeah, these two guys have the highest ceilings on the entire card. But like you said, Elliott's scores are all from earlier. Over his career, he's 9-6, I believe, in three round, or sorry, 6-9 in three round. What is this? Bantamweight, flyweight. What are we at here? Three round flyweight fights. He's 6-9. Average score in those six wins, 117 points. Average score in his last three wins, 89. So a significant drop off, just like you said, with Mr. James Krause. I like the winner to score a ton of points here, but the salaries, I mean, who's paying 9K for Tim Elliott? Like, he's going to be very high owned because of the way things are worked out this week, but that's insane to me. That's $940 over his average salary. I can't imagine having more than 20% of Tim Elliott in my lineups. Excuse me, that might be wrong, but yeah, in my opinion, Altamirano has 85% of the DraftKings upside here, and I'll have a ton of him this week at 7,200. I saw 7,200 for Altamirano against a heartbroken Elliott, and I was like, oh my God, how much can I get of Altamirano? How many lineups can I put him in? Like, all of them? Can I get 100% Altamirano? I'll be trying, that's for sure.
Let me tell you, this fight, you got to load up on it.
Yeah, another have great to. Pivot away from Malarkey.
Exactly. That's what I was going to. Yes, it's Malarkey. Then it's the whoever we said at 7K.
By the way,
and Altamirano is the other pivot.
Low owned combo them. You don't have to worry so much about the pivot if you play. So I'm just going to get a little strategy piece in here, but you don't have to pivot away. The problem, the other people are going to play Malarkey with Altamirano because you don't have to. And that's where
they don't want to leave money. $2,000 on the table.
No,
I will.
Yeah, you have to leave salary on the table on this card to get unique. Then you could play all your guys. You don't have to worry about, oh, if I play Malarkey, I can't play Altamirano because now I got so much. Nah, fuck it. Leave salary over.
Yeah.
Again, I'm going back to the Dom station. I talked about this a couple weeks ago and I took down a tournament, but like, use fantasy points in a win rather than the fantasy point projection.
Yep.
And then control for exposures, because when you play fantasy points in a win, it's going to make weird ass looking lineups, and fine, whatever. But you can do that on this card because the fights are all super close. You don't have to worry about like, hey, I played some massive underdog. You don't play the massive underdog. Like, you just control that exposure. But the fights are, there's no payups here that are locked in monster scores. Again, Karini Silva, the closest thing to it. But here we have another, like, the payups are crazy. I'm going to tell you right now. Here we go. Next up, right? And by the way, I like Altamirano. I like Elliott. I like this fight in general. The Elliott thing, though, I would have been against him outside of the divorce thing and seeing Dern last week. That's fucking with my head. Because she changed into another person. And I'm like, if this guy transforms into some lunatic.
Well, Dern's always had, like, title upside. Tim Elliott, not exactly.
He's not that good. Yeah, I know. And actually, again, I don't understand the odds, because I would have thought that this fight with Elliott and Altamirano would have been like really closely lined. And let me see if this moved. No, it didn't move. It's just been here. I don't really get it. All right. Though, speaking of fights, though, with good finish possibilities, now we're getting there. Jim Miller taking on Jared Gordon. Gordon, -187 favorite again. What's crazy about this fight is this is another underdog that could win and score and be in the nuts lineup, like, for super cheap in Jim Miller. But the fight goes the distance slash ends inside the distance is even odds. So, again, a little surprising, but not a very high inside the distance prop on this fight, sitting right at about even odds. Let me just look at the difference between Miller inside the distance. Yeah, Miller inside the distance +230. Gordon inside the distance +300. So, I mean, there you have it. Big Marley. I mean, these are some veterans. We've seen Jim Miller probably more than any other UFC fighter ever in the history of the UFC. And Jared Gordon's been around doing his thing for a while as well. How do you see this one going down?
Yeah, I think that Miller can maybe keep it close. Minute-wise, I think he can keep it close on the first round, and then he's going to start falling off after that. And I like Gordon quite a bit in the second. I like him a lot in the third round. I just think he's the better striker at this point. He's the better wrestler, and he can control where the fight takes place. My issue is that he's coming off of being knocked out cold. Whether it says that on paper or not, his brain was out a month ago. And when that happens, man, these guys, it could take just a stiff jab and he goes down. So I'm worried. I'm definitely worried for Gordon here, who has been knocked out multiple times before. So I think Miller is very live for a slate-breaking first-round knockout here. He's also a very good grappler. If he can knock Gordon down, I bet he submits him shortly afterwards. But Gordon's going to be our minute winner here. And if this goes the distance, give me the guy who's 11-1 in decisions to beat the guy who's 10-12 in decisions. And that's how I see it going. I wouldn't bet this money line on Gordon because I just don't trust him that much with that chin. But I think plus 135 by points is a pretty good look.
Oh, I would definitely not be laying the minus 190 or 180 or whatever it's at on Gordon. Gordon does have a loss by submission not that long ago to Grant Dawson, Monk. And again, people who submit once, submit again. That happens over and over. I mean, can we not see Jim Miller taking this guy down and submitting him in the first round and just ending it Jim Miller style?
I mean, the dude's got 19 professional submissions. I mean, that is always...
He does.
Always a possibility. I think this is my third and final must play fight of the night. It was the Malarkey fight. It was the Tim Elliott fight. And now it's this one. I really think chances are this one finishes inside the distance. Just like Marley said perfectly, I think Jim Miller early or Gordon later on. I mean, like you said, he got KO'd with a headbutt easily, just out completely in his last fight, barely a month ago. Jim Miller, on the other hand, you can never count him out. Neither guy scores relatively well overall at the weight class. I mean, it's like 99 points per win for 97 points per win for Gordon, 92 for Miller. So not bad, but not terrible. You know, we're not in the Jin Yufrey Elise Reed range at all, but we're also not in the Elliott Altamirano range either. Yeah, I don't have much else to say. Miller's is outscored everywhere where Gordon is the minute winner. He's outscoring his opponents at distance, inside the distance, minute to minute. So he also has the much better strength of schedule. In fact, Gordon, according to the numbers, has the best last five strength of schedule on the entire card. The upside, though, is the Jim Miller finish. While Gordon scores 30 bonus points per win on average in this in three-round lightweight fights, Jim Miller is 62.75. So it's just like you said, if we can get this done early, Miller could break the slate easily. So I'm going to be looking to target both sides of this one. I don't know what my exposure is going to be. The prices are crazy. Gordon is $1,460 over his average salary, guys. Almost $1,500 over.
Seeing Gordon tough favored.
To pay 91. Yeah, it's going to be tough to pay that.
By the way, Gordon should have won against Paddy Pimblett. Let's give him that credit.
That's true. If that's the case, he would be even more expensive here, in which case I'd want to play even less of him.
Now, moving on. Talk about... I think I'm on the Miller side, by the way. I think the fact that Gordon was out cold like 3 weeks ago, I don't understand why he's even allowed to fight.
I'd love to see Miller win this.
I think it's Miller. I think Miller might knock him out on the feet, which is why I don't want to take Miller by submission. I think Miller could knock him out because he was just knocked the fuck out. Now talk about somebody I don't want to pay up for. And Monk, you're going to lose your shit right now. You're going to fucking go through the roof. So Alex Caceres, minus 180, taking on Daniel Pineda, plus 155. And I'm sorry, but Alex Caceres, all right, let's look at the inside of distance prop. But fight ends inside the distance, a shocking minus 180. But that is all Daniel Pineda because he never goes to decision. But I think this might break the trend. Alex Caceres does not finish anybody. He needs to get a submission. He has no punching power whatsoever, has one knockout in the last 10 years. And is he going to submit? I mean, Big Marley, Caceres going to submit Daniel Pineda here? Is Pineda, what, going to gas and get submitted? How does that happen?
Yeah, I mean, Pineda has more submissions than Caceres does, and he's been submitted less than Caceres. I think Pineda's the better wrestler of the two. I think he's a more powerful striker. Yeah, I don't get this line. And it's another one where Caceres, you're going to favor this guy at 65%, but he's won 60% of his fights. And he's 6-7 in his last seven. Like, that's helping his percentage out a whole lot here. It's just a lot of recency bias is all I see. But Pineda looked good in his last fight. And on DraftKings, when Pineda wins, he scores over 100 points. So he's very slate-breaking potential. Another great pivot away from Malarkey. So I just think there's enough spots where I can get away from Malarkey and I can take my shots on these underdogs who I'm picking to win, like Pineda. I think Pineda can finish this fight anywhere. And all of his wins are inside the distance. He's never won a decision. He's 0-5 in decisions. I think Caceres could maybe pick up the volume as the fight moves along and win a decision. But I also think Pineda could get his first decision win here. And if Pineda wins at all, I think he's scoring over 10X, where I just don't feel good about Caceres scoring over 10X unless he does get a finish. But man, I'm going to be fading Caceres. Give me Pineda here. I'll be overweight there. He's my pivot away. One of my pivots away from a very chalky Malarkey.
That's what I'm saying. These are the look who the spend ups are on this card. No one that you want to play.
Like if you told me right now, Pineda's gonna win, Malarkey's gonna win, I think Pineda scores more.
Pineda is a finisher. You got to give him that credit. Like his fights do not go to decision very often. It's finish. I don't think are there any decisions? All finish.
No, he's never won a decision ever.
No. Oh, here's a decision loss. So
yeah, he's lost five, but he's never won.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. And Caceres, it's funny. I'm looking at his DraftKings scores, and they are actually better than I thought, Monk. But every one of these has an explainable circumstance that isn't necessarily repeatable. Like Arosa,
that's what they all. If you finish it, you score well.
Yeah, like all right, Arosa, no chin. We've seen him get knocked out again. Congrats. It's that one, and it's like Kevin Kroom. This guy's terrible. Lost every fight in the UFC. Springer, he gets an early sub. Okay, fine. If he gets an early sub, he's going to do well. Chase Hooper, we know what his issues are. And
there's Kevin Kroom. We mentioned him already.
Yeah, he was so busy banging Elliot's wife that he doesn't even pay attention.
Not Random Marcos. It's definitely not Random Marcos.
No one wants to bang Random Marcos. I'm sorry. I don't want to talk.
Whoa, see, hold on.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't want to. It's not Random Marcos. Like Gina Mazzani's, you know, you could expect a love triangle with Gina Mazzani. Random Marcos, she's a loyal wife.
Classy.
No one should be looking at her.
Class.
She's Iranian. She's not the kind of lady that's going with
stand up gal.
Yeah. She's not going around with other men. The Persians don't do that. They're very pious people. They don't cheat on their husbands, those women.
But he only scored 76 against Kevin Kroom, and Kevin Kroom's not any good.
Yeah, and Kroom's guard. And again, Hooper, we all saw that fight. Like, okay, Hooper, you know, in 2020, when he was 17 years old, yeah, he was skinny like a twig, and he couldn't get a takedown against Alex Caceres. All right. Remember the Gracie loss? So and this guy takes a lot of loss. I cannot. You should never take minus money on Bruce Leroy. But what do you say, Monk? I mean, can he do it again?
He could. This is Daniel Pineda, after all. Before the last fight, I mean, if you remember, some people were talking him up, but a ton of people were counting this dude out, saying how long it had been since he'd been off. Look at all these times. Blah blah blah. Yeah, and
I was counting him out for sure.
So was I? And then he comes out and just completely wrecked. Tucker Lutz, and he was 7K that week. So now everybody's talking him up. That said, I think Caceres is going to go way under-owned, and I do actually like him this week as kind of a sneaky play. I think if he wins, he probably scores well. That said, I'll have a decent amount of Pineda. Remember the bonus points per win stat I gave you at 67.5 for John Castaneda or whoever I was talking about? Maybe it was Jim Miller. Pineda's at 85. Three of his four UFC wins in three round featherweight fights have been in the first round, guys. He's scoring, all four of his wins over 100 points. All four over 100 points. His scoring is ridiculous. That said, his strength of schedule is basically third worst on the card, right behind Souza and Namov. So I'm not counting Pineda as a guarantee at all. He is a dog that I like this week, but I'm not counting Caceres out. I think he's going to be way under-owned Caceres. And while I will have some Pineda, I'm going to have more Caceres than the field, that's for sure. I think he could score, you know, if any score over 90, I think could be good for optimal this week. Just depends on how the underdogs shake out. So give me some of both sides, but I like Caceres more than most.
Here's what I'm going to say about Caceres. GPP, fine, but this is not even at minus 175, 180. This is not a safe cash game play. If this fight goes to decision, which it should, normally Casero's fights, like I said, he could find that submission because he does jump on your back and he gets it. But when he's not doing that, he's just doing that karate style Wonder Boy, one strike, two strike, dart in, dart out. He's tough to die. Where are we in? Are we in a smaller cage? Is this the bigger cage? Are we in Vegas here?
Apex.
We're in the Apex.
Yeah.
So I actually think that benefits higher scores and it probably benefits Pineda a little bit. Well, and Caceres in the sense that he won't be able to run and avoid as much as he generally likes to. So being in the Apex, I do think the smaller octagon might affect a fight like this a little bit, maybe cause it to have a little more action than you normally might get. When he's got all that room to move around as Caceres, he's hard to hit. He's hard to get your hands on. So I could see that benefit. I'm not really sure who it benefits, to be honest, because Pineda might want to go for a takedown as well.
Well, we know what Pineda's going to do in the first round. Let's just go balls out. So
yeah, he's going balls to the wall. I'd be interested to see
if it goes past that, then what happens.
Yeah, it'd be an interesting one. But I'm going to pick Pineda here to get the upset. All right, main event time. Main event time. Even odds fight. Kaikara France, Amir Albazi. Okay. Fight ends inside the distance, minus 145. But that's a low number for a five-round fight. So this looks like a lot of action. I think I don't know if I would. I don't know if I would stack this fight in cash. I'm thinking maybe yes, but I'm not sure if you need to do it. But I have not made that lineup yet. But Big Marley, I mean, Amir Albazi's kind of looked at as a grappler, but I think he's a pretty good striker. Like I'm not sure we should look at him as just a grappler. Whereas Kaikara France is very much a striker with good takedown defense. How do you see this one playing out? And do you see Albazi as more of like a grappler that will strike, or is he a good striker in his own? Can he hang with Kaikara France as a striker?
Yeah, I'm an Albazi guy. I've always thought Albazi's pretty damn good. I think he's got, you know, contender potential. And I do think he's a good striker. I think that is where the fight's close. Maybe Kaikara France does have a small striking edge here. But I don't know, man. I think it's very close on the feet. Kaikara France has been knocked out 3 times. Albazi's never been knocked out. And he's coming off that mean uppercut knockout in his last fight. And I just think the biggest edge in this fight is going to be on the ground. Albazi can out-wrestle this guy. He can out-grapple this guy. He can control minutes on the ground while keeping the fight close on the feet and possibly finishing on the feet. So I'm on the Albazi side. It is 5 rounds now. Can you wrestle if the striking's not going your way? Can you wrestle for 5 rounds? I don't know, but, man, I think he looks the same in round 3 as he does in round 1. So I think he's going to be just fine. I'm on Albazi here. I'm going to be heavy on Albazi and I'm going to be light on France.
Monk, you know, France has 87% takedown defense for his career. And it's a long career that spans a lot of fights. This is a real number. You know, Albazi going for almost 2.5 takedowns per 15 minutes. So that's going to be an important component of this fight. Will Albazi be able to land those takedowns against the guy in France who's really good at stopping them?
I think he will, especially the longer this fight goes. I mean, you said it perfectly, 88% takedown defense, allowing only 5 takedowns out of 41 attempts over his 10-fight career. So that is impressive for sure. Just, I mean, I don't know. Marley said it perfectly. I'm also an Albazi guy. As soon as, you know, his first fight in the UFC, I was like, oh, this guy, you know, could, you know, I just been keeping my eye on him. I'm not going to say, oh, I knew he was going to be champion or any dumb shit like that. But he's outscoring his opponents 2-1, over 2-1 per minute, outscoring them at distance and inside the distance. It's not even close. 4.2 points a minute, allowing just 1 point a minute back at him. Almost 100 points per win, which you would like to see a bit more than that, to be completely honest. It's just run of the mill for this card, since we do have some outstanding scores on this card. What else here? He controls 46% of his fight time. 46% of his total DraftKings points come inside the distance, which is a great number on this card. 63 bonus points, almost 64 per win. Two of his four wins over 100. And the last thing I'll say here, let's see, 81 controls 81, almost 82% of all the grappling time he is involved in. Again, I love how Marley broke this down. I think he'll be able, the longer this fight goes on, he'll be able to get Kai Kara France down, control him. And once he does get him down, I think, you know, the levels are going to be evident at that point. On the feet, I think it's closer than Kai Kara France would like to admit, but we will see about that. As far as ownership goes, man, I'm going to be heavy on Albazi. As soon as I saw him at 8K, we get him at an underdog salary, he's going to be in a ton of my lineups this week, and I'll probably be under the field to Kai Kara France. That said, man, maybe not under the field, maybe around the field, man. This is another case of, and we've seen it a couple of times, where of a UFC vet, established vet, just came off of a title fight going against a guy that is a lot of hype and not a lot of substance as of yet when it comes to the promotion. And everybody's on the hype, and the hype train just gets derailed. So maybe don't X out Kai Kara France. Have some of him, but I do like Albazi here.
Yeah, I would just suggest be aware that Albazi has beaten no one. So exactly. He looked good. He looked good out there, and he's the style of fighter that we like. It's like, oh, he can wrestle. Oh, he's got decent striking. He looks pretty good. He's a little bit cocky in there. Got a little bit of swag, right? But when you're beating Alessandro Costa and Francisco Figueiredo, that ain't Davis Figueiredo. It's the wrong Figueiredo that he's beating.
Yeah, I mean, that's like the definite one advantage you got to give to France is he's faced the way better competition, but he's also lost 13 times or something like
France,
that. Like, this guy loses a lot.
France loses to those guys. Now, I'm not even giving you too much credit for beating a beaten up Cody Garbrandt during his get knocked out by everybody run. But, you know, Askarov is okay. Like, you know, he's losing to the best guys. That's fine. But Brandon Royval, I mean, Brandon Moreno has looked amazing lately. Brandon Royval, I mean, is this guy fighting for a championship soon? What the fuck is he wearing in this?
A lot of people think he is. I don't know, man. Dude's kind of wild.
Yeah, I'm saying, like, you know, he's fought the best guys, Kai Kara France, and he's hung in there. I do like Albazi as well, but I would also caution that I when I watched his tape, like, his wrestling was okay, but it wasn't like, I wasn't like, oh, this is, you know, Khabib or this is Colby. This is, you know, I wanted him to use it a little bit more, to be honest. I thought he lets the striking exchanges go longer than what maybe I'd like to see. I'd like to see him use the grappling a little bit more, but I do think part of the reason why I agree with you guys on leaning Albazi here is because I think his striking might be just as good as Kai Kara France. Like, he looked pretty good out there, but it is absolutely hype train versus guy who's been here, steady vet. So be careful with this one for sure. Guys who are watching and to our community, you know, let us know who you think. The main event, I mean, it's even odds. Who do you think is going to take this one down? Because it's a 50-50 fight, and if you can be on the right side of this, generally, a five-round fight is going to produce well on DraftKings. Neither one of these guys are like massive DraftKings scores either, but it does tend to produce well, and they're small at 125. These 125ers over five rounds are going to land a lot of strikes. So they'll just get you there one way or another. So with that being said, guys, I don't have a great kill shot in my back pocket on this card because it's hard to find a fighter that I think is an underdog that will be low-owned. But let's go around the table. Let's pick our underdog, favorite underdog of the card, our kill shot, going to help us win a tournament. Big Marley, what do you say?
I'm going to go Johnny Munoz Jr., submission or three-round decision.
I like it. That's the edge play. How about you, Monk? Who do you have for your kill shot on this one?
I'm going to have to go with Mr. Altamirano here, putting up a gigantic score in a finish win over Elliott, who probably retires afterwards.
I like that as well. I'm going with Gafarov for now as he remains an underdog, although I believe that will flip at some point. But I like Gafarov. I like his style to produce a monster score on DraftKings this week. The secondary kill shot, or I'm going to give the advice shot here, is just looking at the way that this card breaks down. It's just the second you put Malarkey in your lineup, and I like Malarkey, like, to produce a big score, you know, and you put a kill shot guy in there or two, you know, any one of these, what you find is there is absolutely no need or no interest in spending the salary here. Like, who are you going to spend up for? Caceres? You know, you're not doing that. Gordon, I think he might lose. Elliot, hey, we think he might lose. Carini, once you put, like, it's just no need to spend the salary here. And that's the other component of all of this. You just don't have to worry about it. You're going to pick one of these main event guys, Albazi, and you have just so much salary left. You could do whatever the hell you want. You pick one of Altamirano, Elliot, and if it's Altamirano, I mean, look at that. And yeah, then the last spot.
It's going to be harder to hit 50K than it will be to not hit 50K.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, what do I want to do now? I'm going to play Santos again. You know, I've already got Munoz.
I don't have any 50K lineups this week.
No.
Yeah, it's just don't spend the full salary is where I'm going with it. So with that being said, guys, that'll do it for this one. Kill shot, UFC, France, Albazi. Thank you to Big Marley and Monk Manis. France, not France. Kaikara France.
You're from France.
Do I have to say Cara France? Kaikara France. I can't just say France.
It's hyphenated.
You got me thinking it was going to be in France for a second. I was like, wait a minute.
No, it's not Jessica Rose Clark. It's Kaikara France.
I know. It's annoying to say. It annoys me to say it. Jessica Rose Clark. Luckily, we'll not have to worry about her as she will be cut from the UFC. I'm pretty sure.
She's already said she's not stopping competitive fighting, but it's not going to be at the promotion.
Yeah, I think it'll be in Bare Knuckle or someplace else. We will not see her again. So with that being said, guys, good luck. Let us know in the comments who your kill shot is on this card or what edge you're going to use to try to win this week. I will note another thing. I did some back testing this week, boys. And I did a lot of back testing because I've been hitting like the right mix of fighters the last few weeks, but not hitting the nuts lineup. And I did note that increasing my number of uniques did help my scores going back like the last 15 cards or so. Like it was a dramatically better result, even with the numbers that I had in there. So I'm recommending like
2-1 or 3-2.
I'm recommending 2 uniques.
There you go.
If you're on it, 2 uniques. If you feel confident in your win picks, and 3 uniques, if you feel less confident, like 2 uniques, if you have a 70% or in the mix, you want to go to 3 uniques if you don't have that. So
that's great advice, people.
Yeah. So just letting everybody know who's stuck around. I always like to give a little reason to stick around an hour and 42 minutes to the end. Because a lot of people shut it down.
There you go.
The minute I say, hey, hit the like button, they're like, oh, X out.
It's like the Marvel movies. You got to stay after them credits, baby.
Yeah, this is a little something extra. Like you found out about fantasy points in a win. Now you found out shift to 2 uniques in this format.
There you go.
It's just better based on back testing. So with that being said, good luck this week. We will see you guys at the top of the leaderboards.